is Dr. Kim, licensed clinical psychologist and host of Love to Heal. Today, we have an incredible guest. His name is Mike Gallardo. He's a Paralympian, a javelin athlete, and an Emmy Award winner. Thank you so much for being on today, Mike.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, what a resume you have there. That's pretty exciting. First, I think you just got back from the Olympics. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it was definitely a 16-hour trip. So coming from Tokyo for the Paralympics, and you know, it was definitely a great time. So I was super excited, great experience, and you know, just once in a lifetime thing to do. So I'm super excited. I got to throw the javelin and compete.
Amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey, your background, whatever you want to share, how you got to this place?
Yeah, definitely. I guess I would start from, you know, from my childhood, from, you know, we lived in the ghetto in Los Angeles. And when I was 10, my mom had passed away from cancer, and it was a hard thing to do. Like a hard thing to go through with, it was just me and two of my brothers. I have an older brother and a younger brother. And from there, you know, that was pretty much the hardest thing in my life to overcome, because we grew up together and had to overcome many obstacles. So from there, like, as you start thinking about it, these life problems that you have, everything's so much easier compared to that, you know? So it's just that motivation to keep going and to keep pushing.
That's incredible. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I've been meeting more and more people lately that have lost their moms at an early, early age. And it definitely changes your lens on things. I think it gives you a lot more responsibility and resilience. At the same time, it's kind of a piece of pain that, you know, never really goes away. So do you feel like you became more responsible as a result, or how did that transform you?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, because so it's a crazy story, but yeah. So my aunt signed some papers so we could stay together, so we didn't have to go like in a foster home. So my mom had owned a piece of property, and so we stayed in the house. So we had literally had to take care of each other, and that was it. So, and I think it was like fourth grade. I stood back behind because I was working by myself, so I was cutting people. So first started with, I was going to Costco and I would buy like candies, and then I go to door selling candies. And then I just saved up my money, and then I bought like a lawnmower and weed whacker. So then I started like, cutting people's yards and selling candy at the same time. And so I provided for me and my brothers, and I didn't go to school that year. And so I got held back. And so like, I felt like every other year I was getting made fun of because I was a kid who got held back. But like, it just didn't matter. So like, even that just kept pushing me and driving me to do better and, you know, just keep going. And then after high school, you know, as I got older, that started like, you know, going away because people started realizing I was older than them. So like, they really couldn't bully me. So,
good.
So it was pretty funny. And, you know, as I got to school, I was getting really good at baseball. So I was getting scholarships, and I was a tryout for minor league baseball. And so 9/11 happened, and I just figured that was like a sign because my birthday is on 9/11, which is next weekend. So I was super excited about that. But so then I just decided to join the military because I felt like there was something bigger that I had to do besides baseball. And, you know, I signed up for the Army, which is crazy because by my high school, there's like a mall, and they're all just like lined up, right? So it's like the Army, the Marines, the Navy, and the Coast Guard. So like, I was nervous. Nobody in my family ever joined. So I was like, I'm just gonna open the door, and whatever happens to be, like, that's what I'm gonna do. So then that's pretty much what I did. I opened up the door, and it just so happened to be the Army. And I told them like, hey, what do you guys need? That's what I want to do. And they told me, like, well, we need recon scouts. And they're like, it's a dangerous job. I was like, I don't care. Sign me up for that. And that's pretty much how I went to joining the military.
Incredible. I didn't really realize that you were like so inspirational even as a child. Like, I thought maybe it happened in the military and then transformed you. as far as like setbacks and everything, but like you had, you started instilling that resilience early on. And the interesting part is about is that they say that some of that resilience, or a lot of it actually, is formed in the nurturing stage. And when a mother is more attuned, very attuned and nurturing, and actually tends to their baby, you know, in the first year or two, that actually forms that resilience. So it sounds like, in your opinion, do you feel like you've got that gift to be from your mom, even though you had her just for a short time?
Yeah, no, definitely. Like 100%, because it all like, it all goes down to like, she was a single mother of three. Like that's nuts, especially back then. Like, you know, I was born in 84. So it was a while back ago. And, you know, the thing is, she worked two jobs and then she had us three. So then we played baseball like all the time, all three of us. And she never missed a practice. She never missed a game. And like, there's no way that right now that you could say that you could do that, you know? And, you know, it was crazy that I think about it, because I have two kids and, you know, I'm pursuing my goals. Like, I don't go to all my kids' like soccer games. I don't go to like all their school events, you know, because I'm in Tokyo, or like I'm in another country.
Yeah.
Really crazy how she was able to accomplish that, because that in itself was like a job, just taking care of us.
That's amazing. My mom did the same thing. And it's like, I have to try to live up to her, you know, every day, but that's part of like every single day. And do you do this too? Do you kind of like dedicate your days or your weeks to her? And like, that's how you kind of get past like the grieving or the sadness. That's kind of what I do. Do you do anything now that like honors her or makes it a little bit easier to not have her around?
It is hard. Like every day, like, you know, I have two, like I said, two boys, and on their birthdays, or me going to Tokyo, and, you know, she's not, I mean, nobody could watch over there, but like, you know, even on TV, and sometimes it is hard and it's daunting. Like it pulls a lot from you, a lot of energy, but at the same time, like, you know, her being proud of me and accomplishing like such big things, and, you know, being a great father, you know, just doing these regular things, like that brings comfort in knowing that, like, you know, whatever you believe in, but like, you know, she's smiling down on me, just like, keep going, like, don't stop. And so like, you feel like that presence, that energy, to just that extra push you need to keep going.
That's beautiful. And then we got to get in there to figure out. So I know there were some major setbacks. There was some trauma. You know, what kind of changed you in the military that was pretty major?
Well, you know, one thing is, I was a recon scout. So when I was in Iraq, we would do like route clearings a lot to protect everybody. And we were on patrol on Route Tampa, which they call Death Valley, because like there was like size of craters on the road, so from IEDs exploding. So that was like our main mission, was just to like try to, you know, limit the IEDs that they were setting off, you know, catching all the bad guys planting IEDs and stuff like that. So we're doing a battalion size mission, which means like somewhere around like 2,000 soldiers are going to rely on us to clear the way for them to go get like a high value target. So we ended up leaving like at 2 a.m. and we had to do this route clearance. And as we cross this bridge, like anytime there's a bridge to go over to get somebody, we call it a choke point. So that only means like there's one way in and one way out, and it's that bridge. So like they do this on purpose because they know where we're coming.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, they planted a daisy chain ID, which means that more roadside bombs like in a row. So like there happens to be like usually three or more. And so the first one went off and it wasn't that big and we got blown up. And so we decided to keep going. And there was like dismounts, like people on the side, because we knew that there was going to be a bomb. And so it was like really dark. It was raining. There was lightning. And so as we try to call in the radio, like, hey, there's another IED. Don't like step on it. And so the radio wasn't working. And I was a gunner, the guy who sticks out of the Humvee, usually the guy who dies first. And so I'm trying to yell at them. They can't hear me because of the lightning. And I started trying to fire at the roadside bomb because it was really huge. and nothing was setting it off. And so I towed the truck and I was like, hey, we're gonna have to run it over, just run it over with the wheel so that it absorbs most of the shock. And so, you know, we ended up running it over, and it was just really huge. The engine blew out of the truck. I flew out of the truck, and my truck commander lost both of his legs, and he was like knocked out. And, you know, from there, I remember that I was knocked out for a while. I woke up and there was people shooting at us. There was an RPG like shot at me, but it missed. And then from there, like all I could see was my truck commander still knocked out in the truck. So I tried opening up the door and I couldn't open it. So then I tried prying it open with my foot, like, you know, how you put your foot on the door and you like try to use all your body weight to open it. And little did I know that it was melted shut and it was still hot. So it melted my Achilles tendon off. And that's how I had to have my amputation from my left side. And then, you know, after a while, I realized what happened, that my Achilles tendon was melted off, and I just ended up, you know, knocking out. And next thing you know, I woke up in the hospital.
What did that do to your psyche? Because I interview a lot of people, and first of all, the way you present the things that you've accomplished, I mean, it's, I don't get to meet a lot of people that actually like come out of it as far as like mood, mental health wise, people are averse to getting the help. Like, how did that change your psyche in the interim? And how did you get out of that? Like, were you initially agitated? Did you feel hopeless? Any of that? Or what was your psyche like right after?
Right after, it was pretty bad. Like, you know, again, like I was like, oh man, I was like a baseball, you know, wanting to play baseball. And now like I go and the doctor's saying, you know, my foot's not working and I'm not going to be able to do anything besides walking. And like, once you told me that news, like I was so like, that messed up my psyche like so bad, because like, you know, these guys are doctors, like they're supposed to be the smartest human beings, you know, mm-hmm. on the planet, right? Like mm-hmm. so hey. And I was like, so then I started thinking about it, and I was just like, it took me about like a good 2 to 3 months, maybe. I didn't let it bother me for too long, but I remember I was going out with like my cousins and I was just drinking, and like they talk about like committing suicide. I knew like I was never to the point where I wanted to commit suicide, but like I did want to die. Like there was a point where like I was on a freeway and I just jumped out of a moving car that was going like 60 miles an hour on the freeway. And you know, it was pretty bad because of that news that I was told. And after that, actually, that when I tried doing that, I like realized like that wasn't for me. Like I should have died again. And I should have died when I got hit by that IED. And I realized my life wasn't over and that the doctor was wrong, that I could do more than just walk. And so another thing that also helped me realize that I was able to do more is a lot of veterans were committing suicide at the time when I got injured, because I got hurt in 2007. And that's when we were doing a big push of, you know, Osama bin Laden and stuff. And so a lot of people are getting injured, losing both legs and both arms or all four. And I'm just like, why am I sitting here crying about just a foot? Like, it's just a foot. Like, there's way more things that could be worse. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to provide these veterans to let them know that we could do more. We could do more as amputees, as people, as just human beings, to be inspiring. So then I sat down and I said, what do I want to do? And I said, you know, I want to be inspiring, motivating, and let these other veterans know that it's just, this is not the end of life. So I said, what's the hardest thing to do, like known to man, right? And I said, started thinking, and I never even knew about it. And I was like, oh man, an Iron Man. So then I was like, which one's the hardest one? They all say Kona. So I was like, all right. So then that year I started training to do a Kona, and like 7 months after my amputation, I ended up doing it. Now it took me like 15 hours and I don't even remember so many minutes. But you know, after I accomplished that, I was like, wow, like that's amazing. Like it took a lot. And even during that, it took a lot of resilience to like finish. I remember after the bike, it's 112 mile bike. you still have to run a marathon. And I was like, holy shit, like, I still have to run a marathon.
Wow.
And 10 hours in, you know what I mean? And I was just like, all right. So I started running and I was like, you know, all I need is one foot in front of the other. Like, don't think about the mileage. Don't think about the ending result, just one foot in front of the other. And that just became my motto, like, from that Ironman. It's just like life. You never know what the end is. You never know what the end goal is, what your time's going to be, or how long you have to live. And, you know, and you just think about it. It's daunting. It can be overwhelming. But like, if you just look at it as like, you're just putting one foot in front of the other, then it just becomes a little bit more easier.
That's incredible. So you have to tell us, so what are exactly are you doing now as far as competitions?
Now what's funny is like, so I was working for Major League Baseball, and that's how I won the Emmy. I was doing graphic design. I was making some money, like, you know, I was making somewhere in the six figures. And I was like, man, I want to do something. Like, I always wanted to train for the Paralympics, but I'm getting really old. And, you know, it's getting harder because all these kids are really young and really good. So I was like, so I ended up quitting my job just so I could pursue the Paralympics and make Tokyo Olympics. And so I've only been training for like a year in javelin. And I was able to make the Paralympics and throw in that big competition. Granted, I didn't place where I wanted. I ended up placing like 7th. And so that's my next goal, is that I want to, you know, I want a medal. So I'm going to be practicing and training until 2024 and, you know, make the top three in the javelin, because it's really hard to explain, because I compete against pretty much able-bodied guys. So, you know, I compete with people who have drop foot, so they have both legs, you know, and, and it's a lot harder to compete against that. But, you know, again, I could sit here and complain about it, or I could just accept the challenge and, you know, be like, I'm going to get myself that much more better.
Mike, your energy is incredible. I can't tell you, like, you're super inspirational. Do you do motivational speaking or life coaching or anything like that? Or do you just inspire everybody that's around you?
I try to use, you know, my social media as a platform, but I do try to like inspire people who are around me and touch that way. I wish I could get into like coaching people and stuff like that, but I feel like, you know, I still need to improve on some things in order to coach people to how to improve themselves. Like, I haven't reached that point to where like I feel like I'm at an ultimate high and that I could like train people on how to do that. I feel like there's still something missing and I just haven't found it yet.
Got you. You know, it sounds simplistic, but I have to say, like, the recipe that I've seen and all the time I've been doing this work, and I've been really fortunate how I fell into doing psych evaluations partially, was someone came to me. So I get to see, and although people think it's trite to say, you know, compare yourself to other people that have it, you know, worse, I feel like it helps so much with gratitude. And it helps because you need to be in a positive space, because someone that you're talking to is going through something more. And I mean, like, especially right after it happens, as far as like a physical ailment or something major that way. But the recipe, I feel like, really is like some kind of a therapy, whether that's life coaching or an intensive outpatient program, if that is individual therapy, group therapy, and then finding that passion and actually starting, like you said earlier, I love that advice, is step by step, just put one foot in front of the other and have these little tiny goals, and they add up at the end of the year. But we really don't want to dismiss the mental toughness piece, the passion piece, and finding and rebuilding the identity with something that's really pulling you. Because I really truly believe that that is part of that full recipe of really coming out on the other side and rebuilding the identity. And for you, do you feel like your identity is even stronger now, or how is your identity feeling at this point?
No, I think it's definitely stronger, you know, because I could rely on myself. I don't know if you ever remember, but I did reach out to you like in social media because, you know, of mindfulness, you know, and the way you taught performance to athletes, because like it is really hard at sometimes, like, because you want to be this perfectionist, you want to be this person who's the best and at the best at what you do. And that's me. Like, I don't do something just to do it. Like, I want to be the best. And if I'm not the best, like, I'm gonna work my damn ass off to like make sure I'm the best. Like, you're not the best. Like, it's daunting because like there's so much pressure that you put on yourself, and that's when the mindfulness comes in handy. And I remember reaching out to you because it's what I needed. And I'm so much stronger, like, from all the tips that you give out. And you know, you may not even know that how much people you're helping through your social media. So like, you know, it definitely helped me, and I want to be in that position where I'm helping other people, whether I know it or not. I'm just doing it because I'm just being myself. And, you know, I think it's reaching out to people and seeking the support that you need sometimes, because it's not every day is going to be like the best day or the greatest day. I still have like bad days. I still have like days where I just want to shut out. And usually it's days like where it's my mom's birthday or my mom's like day that she passed away, which is crazy. You know, it's always those days. And like, sometimes I try not to keep track, but my mind knows like, is that it? Like, it'll tell me like, you're shutting down today. And it's okay for that one day to shut down, you know, to feel sad, you know, grieving, because I think you still have to go through that process in order to be that the best person that you could be.
Yeah, grieving continues, absolutely. And the people that I see like the most triggered and it gets the most dangerous is when it's like the anniversary of a death or their birthday. So it's nice to keep track of that. And it's okay to like have like a ritual, like light a candle or write a poem to the mom or dad or your loved one that you've lost, or like dedicate the day. Like, today is in honor of you. I'm going to actually be the best version of myself, even though I'm going to be around agitated people, you know, I'm still going to like dedicate it to you. And like, it's hard because especially, you know, guys, especially I think, and I was not a crier at all. I call myself a non-crier before. Then after my mom's passing, it's like, I had to. So I just started seeing it as like a steam room experience or like a spa, because that's the way I could say like, okay, it's a cleansing. And I didn't feel so like out of control by crying when I needed to, because I really like to like have things together, obviously, but it breaks you down. So you have to find ways that it just feels cathartic and soothing and honoring them. So it's just so beautiful that you are cognizant of that grief and that you just keep going and moving forward like an athlete, really. And going back to athletes, you talked a little bit about perfectionism. And what I see about with successful athletes like yourself is that they challenge the perfectionism. And it's really about competing with themselves. And those athletes tend to do better. That they're, yes, in competition in that moment, the real competition, they're competing against others. But typically in practice, it's really about them competing against them. And they activate despite their black and white, all or nothing thinking, because they'll think they want it all good all the time, perfect. But even though it's not, they will continue. So they will challenge that perfectionism and keep going. And again, another marker of a very successful athlete and a successful person in general. But that is tough to do, but you have to just activate, like you said, and do it anyway. So I have to tell you, like, you've already inspired me with your energy. Like, I'm set up for my day just by your story, by your energy, like your big smile. I'm so happy that you reached out originally, and I've been wanting to talk to you for so long. What are you thinking about grit? Like, they say that research actually shows that if you have grit, obviously you're a better performing athlete, but the research also shows that you're a better person in any relationship, whether it's like a coworker, a friendship, a romantic relationship. What are your thoughts about grit, about just going forward despite setbacks? How has that helped you? What would be your advice to other people about harnessing that grit?
So, right. So like there's always like this thing that, you know, social media or people try to put on you, right? Like they always ask you, like, I always got asked, I don't know why, are you a person who sees a glass half full or half empty, right? Like, are you optimistic or not? And so like, I feel like we put a boundary on ourselves, like all together. Like, why does there even have to be a glass? Why is it half full? Like, the glass puts a limitation on you. Like, yeah, you can fill it up. You're like super optimistic, right? Like, that's so cool. But like, why do you have a glass? Like, does the ocean have a glass? Does, you know, nice. It, and I feel like even this grit thing, like, do you have grit? I don't know. I think like, in the end, it's just who you are, like it's ingrained in my DNA just to keep going, like, you know, to always like push forward to be better. Like, I just want to be the best version of myself. And like, you know, there, like I was saying before, there are days where like, I'm not the best of myself and I just want to you know, and you accept those days and you just move on to the next day. You wake up the next morning, you should be grateful that you're alive. Like, I think, you know, my experience has told me, like, or I'm relieved, like, that I'm alive. It's okay to feel these, like, we're supposed to go through these days where you don't feel like yourself, and it's okay. You know, society is like, when you say you're not a crier, right? Like, that's the same thing. That's society putting us, saying that we're weak if we're crying. Mm-hmm. Well, and like, it's not. I feel like it's a strength doing things that it's okay to do, to go through this process. And I feel like, you know, the things that push me are like from my past, or like, you know, reaching out to people such as yourself and being like, hey, like, I'm not feeling right today. And like, you giving me advice, or my friends giving me advice, you know, my brothers giving me advice, like, they're all support, knowing all those things, like, that pushes me forward. And like,
it's just like your body, needs rest days. Your mind needs rest days. Yeah. We talked about mindfulness, like, you know, have the grit or have the perseverance or have, you know, determination, but know when you need to have the moment and take that rest day and do it for mental health. So instead of just taking a physical off day, you take a mental health day and then you get right back on it. So you don't feel ashamed for that rest day or that rest moment. You actually feel rejuvenated, regenerated. And that balance is really key. And that's hard, especially for like early amateur athletes. That could be really hard for them to learn. But then eventually they get with like a mindset coach or a sports psychologist and they start working on that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like I think it's like you said, matured. I matured really mm-hmm. early. So I have that matureness. Yes. But it's like I had to go through it. You know, it's not like I had the choice. So yeah. I think like, but helped me have like the grit or like the perseverance to keep pushing forward, because it was just like I had to. There wasn't a choice. Like, you know, it's just funny. Like,
well, that's your mental toughness, I have to say. And this is what differentiates you from some other people that maybe potentially didn't have the same type of mom or the same type of mindset that you had. But what I'll see is they'll just feel broken down by it, defeated by it. They'll be agitated and now all their relationships are falling apart. They'll be hopeless and they won't even take the first step because they feel like, what's the point? I'm not going to be the best. So for you, this is why I see you as such an inspiration, because I have interviewed thousands of people and I see them in this moment. Usually it's right after an accident. But still, there's like, there's no hope at all. And it gets so dark, as I know that you were in that dark place too. But your mindset of like, we're going to do this. We're going to see what else works. We're going to try the other things out. You actually made a list of like, what are things that are actually challenging that would be exciting to accomplish and to activate in that way. Like, people don't understand how impactful that is to have a new dream, a newfound goal, and actually start taking little steps toward it. Did you actually have to have a coach, like, or a life coach to get you to where you were, or were you just like self-taught as far as being a javelin athlete?
So originally I was self-taught, and you know, so I was doing track and field. I was a runner and I was fast, right? So then I go into the Paralympics and I find out, I was like, oh man, I'm really not that fast. So then I started training, you know, to get faster. And again, I was doing this all on my own, and I happened to see a javelin in the middle of a football field from a college I was training at. And I was like, I wonder what that is. And so like, I started throwing it and I was like, oh man, this is actually really fun. So then a coach came out and I thought I was gonna get in trouble. And I was like, I'm sorry for like messing around with this. I don't even know what it is. And he's like, oh, it's a javelin. It's part of track and field. I was like, for real? So like, all you do is just throw it? He's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's all like, here, just like throw it as far as you can. So I was like, all right. So I didn't know how to run and do anything. So I stand up with 2 feet and I just like cock back a little bit and I just throw it as far as I could. And he like, his jaw just dropped, like, cause it was like around 30 meters. And he was like, man, that's pretty far. Like, even for an able body, that's pretty far for just throwing it without any momentum or anything. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I'm just throwing it. So he's like, you should try this, like, just stop running and throw the javelin. I was like, all right, well, I don't like I don't like running anyway. So I was just doing it because I wanted to be in the Paralympics. It was the first thing I knew I could do. And so I started watching videos on like YouTube and, you know, Instagram and stuff like that of like all these top guys throwing the javelin. So then that was pretty much, I was just trying to replicate what they were doing. And so the coach, he actually let me use the javelin every day or every other day. He was like, here's a shed, the key. And like, he's like, don't worry, you seem very trustworthy. I was like, all right, well, I'm not going to steal anything. So then I just started throwing it every day. And then it just became to where I was able to make the Paralympics now. And then USA saw that I was throwing pretty far, the USA Paralympic team. And so this January, they put me with a coach so that I could actually learn how to throw it right. And so from January to, you know, I think April, I was able to get a coach to actually train me to throw the javelin correctly.
You're incredible. So what do you do now? Like, what are you telling yourself every day, or what's your morning ritual to get you hyped up?
Oh man. I don't know. I was always like a morning person, and you know, I feel like now I'm in a spot where I don't need to like hype myself up. It's just like, let's just do it. Like
natural. Good. Now you're in a place where it's so reinforced, because like you're competing like on an international level. So now it's like you have this like automatic reinforcement built in. So you keep that going.
Yeah.
It's good. Such good stuff. I love it. I have to have you back on. You really rejuvenated me today, and I hope someone got something out of this. I'm sure that they did. There are certain types of therapies that are recommended. Mindfulness is one, EMDR, and then other modalities for grief. So if you guys are struggling with grief, trauma, or you simply just want to overcome a setback, a relationship issue, I'm going to put that in the show notes. And I'm so grateful that you came on today, Mike. Where can they find you?
Well, you could find me on Instagram at Rocket Arm Mike.
At Rocket Arm Mike.
Yeah. Awesome. Sorry. Yeah. I don't know that stuff, but yeah, I check it all the time. And, you know, I always tell people to reach out to me, cause like I've been there and I know the struggles. I know, you know, that if I could help somebody, then I will, like, you know, again, being not just the best me, but the best, like to help as many people as I could. And I feel like that's one thing I know that my mom would want me to do, is just help as many people as I could along the way, the process of reaching my goals.
Mike, thank you for everything you've given us today. I'm going to talk to you very soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.